Check my inbox and what do I see? Just another day, another T-R-A-D-E. I'm an addict, and I need it in my veins. I'm an addict, otherwise I feel plain now. Every day I wake up, people got a problem. Making all these trades up, got me singing got them. But I've been paid up, I even started from the bottom. See, I don't wait up, I ain't even playing possum. So what it cost, I'm just a couple of firsts. Can't believe that it worked, not to say I'm a jerk. But I'm an addict, it's what I said in the first. You can curse all you want, you can pray in your church. I'ma keep tapping return. I win up, I learn. I ain't trying to burn any bridges. I yearn for the feeling I earn. I'ma win, it's a turn. You had a cheek before I drop you like the beat. I'm an addict, and I'm not really ashamed. I'm an addict, I'm reclining with the brain. I'm an addict, and the pot is what I'm playing. I'm an addict,
Russ and Rocky.
Other names, Trade Addicts Pod. Let's go.
I am Rocky Petrella, and I have a trading problem.
I'm John Hogue, Superflex Dude, and I have a trading problem.
I'm Tommy Blair, and I also have a trading problem.
We should have talked about who was going second and who was going third before we went live. But but yes, as you can hear, Frank's not here. So I have two great guys with me who we didn't plan out who was going to say what. But from the Superflex Super Show, I got Tommy B, I got John Hogue, two of my great friends, and we're going to have a great show tonight. It is championship week. It's been a really bad season for me. I have, as everyone knows, I have around 30 teams. I have only two title matchups this week. I'm very sad about it. How did you guys do? How are you this week?
Roughly the same. I mean, my best team was in your Tecmo League, and you know what happened there? Like,
yeah.
So, like, because you do all play in the playoffs, which I freaking love, but man, it kicked my ass.
Yeah. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. Yeah. And I had five bye teams. Only one of them survived the semis to not even win a game for four of them. What about you, Tommy?
I did okay. Had 25 of 31 make the playoffs, and the first round was just miserable, but pretty strong last week. I've got 12 teams in the championship round.
Nice. 12 of 31. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah. He's like trying to make this sound like, oh, I'm just like you guys.
I know.
So rough.
I did okay.
12 teams in the championship. We just got
done. Average it out. We're doing great.
If you average this, then we all have like four or five teams in the, per person in the
there we go. I want your best team, Tommy.
Rocky, I gotta be honest, man. This was a tough year though. Like my teams that I've had for a long time did really well. Like when you compound all of the efforts over 5 and 6 years, yeah, the process works, like whatever your strategy is. But the teams I've only had for like a year or two, they got bounced promptly from the playoffs. And it's like, I think that's instructive in some way. I know we don't want to take too much away from like a 1 week sample size, but to me it was like, okay, there's still work to be done on these teams that I took over the last couple of years.
Yeah. I don't know if I just wasn't active enough this year. It was a rough year in general. Like I normally probably have at least 2/3 of my teams make the playoffs. It was only 16 of 31 this year. So I think I need to pick it up. I haven't been sending out enough trades and things like that and doing enough maneuvering. So, but we got a lot of trades tonight that we're going to get to in a little bit.
So we just recorded an episode of Superflex Super Show a couple hours ago, and we kind of talked about this was just a really hard year to like to stay focused and stay active. And we were kind of talking through that. I'm curious, Rock, like what was it for you? What about this year in particular?
I'm not even sure. I feel like I wasn't as top of the rookie. You can go back to the beginning of the year. I wasn't as top of the rookie drafts. I honestly just think it's life getting in the way and maybe a little fantasy fatigue. You know, I've been doing this for like hardcore with this many teams for like 7-ish years now. And I think over time, maybe, you know, there's a little fantasy fatigue. You see it. I see it a lot in my leagues. Like people just saying, I need to cut. I mean, people are always cutting back. I mean, I see it more and more. I feel like where people are like, I was in 30. I need to get down to 10. Sorry, I'm leaving. Like things like that. So I haven't cut back as much. I did cut back some. I used to be more around the 40 area, but I haven't cut back. Maybe I should cut back more and just concentrate more on those like 15 to 20 teams or something like that. And I could probably be a lot more active.
Did you have like one league that you were just pretty focused on?
Well, one of the, it's funny, the one of the ones I'm most focused on is actually my redraft league because it's the highest buy-in and I've been in it for 22 years. But in terms of dynasty, not really. I mean, as the year goes on, I do, but like in the non-point scoring season, there wasn't any one particular one I feel like I was more focused on. I feel like it was just, as you know, you focus more on the good teams as the season goes on. And less on the bad teams. but prior to that, no, I kind of just roll through them all and set my lineups. And during the non-point scoring season, I will take time at points to just kind of go through a handful and then go through the next handful and see what I want, especially around rookie draft time and trying to make trades there and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, camp in one.
What about you?
So this is kind of what we were talking about. One thing that I noticed this year, and it kind of tracks with Tommy as well, is like leagues that had a more going on than just a typical, you know, waiver run on Wednesday, first come, first serve, set your first lineup Thursday, reset the lineup before Sunday, and then just let it roll. Like for me, it was like the orgs got so much attention from me. There's just so much more going on with those. And it's just, it's so much easier to put your attention on that. Tommy was kind of talking about Super League, which had a lot of, it also, you know, there are kind of a lot of moving parts and there's also a lot more community in both of them, where everything that could be kind of communal in a normal dynasty league, just like making trades, is adversarial and kind of sucks. Like,
right.
I shouldn't say that on Trade Addicts, but like.
Okay. But so yes, championship week, great for Tommy, not so great for me and Hogue, but hopefully we all win on the teams we have left. But let's get into the news. Frank is not here, but as always, he has provided us with plenty of news to talk about. The first of the major stuff, Tua benched for the rest of the season. Also, Mike McDaniel is expected to return in 2026, and Tua is not expected to return. So I guess before we move on even to the next thing, this is kind of a big one. So where are you guys at with Tua? Like, are you I know Tommy's interested in acquiring him cheap because I think he sent me an offer for him at TA6. but where are you guys at with Tua? Are you trying to buy low, or are you feel like he's basically backup material now, or what are you thinking? Tommy, why don't you go first since I mentioned that trade you threw me?
Yeah, I'll pass the question on to you, John, with another question. How are you managing Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield, Daniel Jones, all of those other falling knife situations with highly drafted quarterbacks? You're the super flex dude. Like, teach us. What do we do when these profiles fail, but they're really resilient?
I mean, the problem is Baker Mayfield kind of broke the mold, and he did it recently. So I don't know if there's necessarily a process to it just yet. I mean, I think that we're learning that it's going to take some patience. Like, you almost just give up a roster spot to Tua and say, either this is going to become like either this is Baker Mayfield and or Daniel Jones, and in a couple of years I've got a starter, or this is Trey Lance and I'm just hoping forever and never getting anywhere. But you kind of have to just be okay with that. Like, that's kind of it's just a sunk cost there with him.
What if you're rostering Tua, Rocky? Like, what are you trying to do with that? Like, it's one thing to send out an offer, right? It's another thing when the guy's already on your roster and it's like, now what, you know?
Yeah, I'm holding. I've been a pretty big Tua guy for most of his career, so I have a pretty good amount of Tua, and I'm basically just holding You sent me like Blake Corum or something for him, which I wasn't that interested in. I would move him. I mean, but I feel like the offers I'm going to get are going to be similar to what you sent. Something along the lines of maybe a mid second is probably what you can hope for at this point. And some people probably wouldn't even want to do that. So I think I just hold and see what happens. I think there's a real chance he could just be a backup somewhere, or maybe a you know, starting for I'm trying to think of the term, like I'm blanking completely. When like a guy bridge. Starts for a rookie,
yeah,
at the beginning of the year, yeah, bridge. That's the word I was looking for. I was like completely spacing on that term, or a bridge quarterback. I could absolutely see that, but I could see a world where he gets the chance to start somewhere next year. So I'm basically just holding at this point. And if he ends up a backup and I'm screwed, I don't think I'm I'll wait till somebody gets hurt. He starts and I can move him for a second then.
Like kind of what we learned this year is like it can be a super slow burn and you still get at some point like he's a project for Marcus Mariota was basically a project for what, like 8 years before he finally like is fantasy relevant in Washington this year. Like it could be something like the trajectory always ends up.
Geno Smith tanked for the Jets and then like 10 years later, whatever it was.
Right.
He finally became a full-time starter again. Yeah.
Yeah. Brissett's been awesome, but like how long did it take for us to finally get to that point? You know, it's like that's kind of the thing. It's like the trajectory ultimately lands on a starting role for these guys at some point. It's just, how long do we have to wait, and how long are you willing to wait?
Yeah, like I said, surprised
if he turned into Ryan Fitzpatrick, right? Where he has multiple stops with a bunch of different teams, and it's like every time this guy plays, he puts up crazy passing numbers, and then he goes back on the shelf until the next situation arises. That's not a unreasonable outcome, and that's something I would pay a second for. Like maybe not a liquid second, but the equivalent value of to try to get into him now.
Yeah,
like I said, that's probably all you're getting now. And I said, if I feel like if even if he goes somewhere where he's a pure backup next year, he could, like John said, at some point, maybe 2 years down the road, get a starting spot. Or if he's in, especially if it's a spot where there's good coaching, he could, if the starter gets hurt, you're getting a second for him at that point anyway. So I don't see the point of moving him for a second now without knowing exactly what's going to happen going forward. Some other news, Jacoby Myers extension, 3 years, $60 million, $40 million guaranteed. Garrett Wilson and Devin Neal both out for the season. And also Quinshon Judkins, dislocated ankle, broken leg. He avoided any major ligament damage and will be ready for 2026. I just lumped these three pieces of news all together. Any of these four guys that you particularly want to talk about or find any of this, you know, Garrett Wilson to me is kind of interesting going forward. So I see John nodding there. You want to speak on that?
Love Garrett Wilson. So we talked a little bit about this on the episode that's coming out later this week as well. But, you know, Tommy's NB10 score, which is kind of focused on wide receiver participation and efficiency, shows that Garrett Wilson is kind of in pretty rarefied air. And the beauty of him, you know, missing the rest of the season is he's going to be out of sight, out of mind by the time the non-point scoring season hits. And there's going to be a massive, massive buy opportunity on a guy who could, they're going to address quarterback. They're not going into next year with Justin Fields, Tyrod Taylor. Like, I mean, you know, very good chances, Francisco Mendoza, whatever that does for you. But, you know, Kyler Murray has been a consideration. Tua could be a consideration. There's kind of a lot that they could do there. And it wouldn't take a lot to upgrade the quarterback play for Garrett Wilson.
And before he got hurt, he was producing this year with that mediocre to bad quarterback play as it was. And has for, you know, most of his career, but especially the last year and a half. Before the injury this year, he was basically like borderline wide receiver one numbers. Tommy, anything on any of these other guys before we move on to some of the minor news? Or do you want to speak on Garrett Wilson?
Always buy running backs with good draft capital at depressed prices. If you can get in on Judkins at any sort of discount or even laterally to what his value was 2 weeks ago, you should probably at least consider it or try to get into that. The next meaningful week for 10 of the 12 teams is probably in August or September. So plenty of time to rehab that value as well as the ankle or leg or whatever broke.
Especially when it's not soft tissue, you know, like this is something that that heals completely and they're going to treat it like it was a ligament injury. It's going to depress his value. And it's like, I mean, he's coming back at 100% by training.
Okay, so let's get into some of the minor news and notes. Jordan Love concussion, Malik Willis shoulder injury. We don't know as of Monday who's starting against the Ravens Saturday. Packers not expected to sign a QB, so one of them looks like they're probably going to play. Lamar Jackson day-to-day with a back contusion. Funny enough, that redraft league where I made the championship is Superflex, and I have Lamar, Love, and Stafford, so I'm anxiously awaiting updates on those two guys. I'm hoping I have at least one of them to start. Gardner Minshew torn ACL, a lot of quarterback injuries this week. They signed Shane Bouchel to the practice squad, former Chief backup. Could have real dynasty impact if Mahomes isn't ready for week one in 2026. Not a great week to be starting your Chiefs, it looks like. J.J. McCarthy hand injury out this week. Max Brosmer, so we're probably back to Justin Jefferson being trash. Not that J.J. McCarthy was great and really supporting Justin Jefferson, but Max Brosmer looked atrocious when he was in there. Marcus Mariota, questionable, multiple injuries. Josh Johnson back up there. D.K. Metcalf suspended for 2 games for the interaction with a fan this week. Devontae Adams.
I like calling that interacting, by the way.
I know.
Hey, bitch.
I'm just using nice words.
Interacting is doing a lot of work
there. It's so good. John, it reminds me of the Washington team back in the 50s or whenever. They had this super racist owner, right? And they wouldn't sign black players. Mm-hmm. And so one of the beat reporters wrote a byline, Jim Brown integrates the Redskins end zone 3 times on Sunday. It's that kind of thing, you know?
And then the only other things Frank put on here for us were not super relevant, fantasy relevant, but Pat Bryant only had a concussion and released from the hospital, which is good news. If you saw that, he went off on a stretcher, looked pretty bad. And Lane Johnson expected back for the highly anticipated game against Buffalo this week. I don't know. There's a lot of dynasty talk to be with any of this. Most of this is weekly stuff that Frank threw on here, which is why we put it in the minor news. Mm-hmm. I'm curious. You're someone you don't like Lamar to begin with, right? Right, Hug?
Correct.
Yeah, so yeah, I guess this injury marred season is just making you like him less.
Oh my. Yeah. I mean, I'm surprised that you survived the semis in that league with him.
You don't even know the best part. I got scared of the Seattle matchup. I started both of them and survived.
Oh,
I started Love and Lamar.
Wow.
Well, I also had Duke and Kittle, which helped a lot. So,
like you're kind of battle tested with crappy quarterbacks though, so you're good. Like when I heard Lamar and Jordan Love and Matthew Stafford all on this, well, Stafford fits what you typically do, but Lamar and Love, I was like, that's not a Rocky Patrol the depth chart right there.
Yeah, I was in redraft. I'm a little more willing to go to take the high end guys in the first round and figure it out during the season. But dynasty, I like to play the cheap game. I guess I don't think there's really anything, like I said, dynasty wise to kind of focus on here. So we can just move on to the trades and listener questions. I'll let Tommy pick because I think Hoag's been on slightly more recently. Do you want to start with the questions or the trades?
Let's knock out these trades. This is Trade Addicts.
Okay, trades. Reminder, TA leagues are 12-team PPR super flex tight end 1.75 tight end premium with 0.05 per return yard for all leagues except TA one, and there are no TA one trades this week. We got quite a few, as you can imagine, during semis week. A couple of these, I think, were actually in the last day or two after semis week, but most of them before. The first one is in Trade Addicts 2. Matthew Stafford and a 27 third for a 27 first. So I mainly threw this on here. I mean, anything with a first we usually throw on here anyway. We don't always throw other pick for player trades, but are you giving up a first for Matthew Stafford in your playoffs?
Like, you better tell me that guarantees you a fantasy championship. That's the only way I'm down with this trade. And you know me, I love my quarterbacks, but Matthew Stafford, like, you might get him for one game.
Yeah, if you don't win.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Tommy? Are you willing to give up that kind of draft capital for an old Matthew Stafford in the playoffs?
It's really tough, isn't it? Because Matt Stafford is the fourth highest scorer in Trade Addicts scoring this year at almost 24 points per game. And so you're looking at, can I replicate that in a different way? Can I make a dynasty trade, right? And build out maybe the next 24 months of my roster construction using that first and maybe something else. Would I do it? I mean, people do crazy stuff this week. Mm-hmm. In a vacuum? No, heck no. If I was in the championship and, you know, we're in TA6 together, if I could take down J Mike, hell yeah, I'm paying the first. Yeah. You know, it's that. Are you slaying Goliath? Values go out the window, don't they?
Yeah, to speak to that exact point, I gave up a second. It's not on the sheet because it was a lesser trade, but I gave up a second and third for Jacoby Brissett, knowing I had such a long shot of beating J Mike, but I just wanted to try, so yes. I had to do it. But yeah, I agree. I mean, I love old quarterbacks, but I don't want to give up a 27 first for Matt Stafford when. Again, you literally might only get him for the one game, but even if you make the championship game, it could be only two. And I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility he retires, like, especially if they win the Super Bowl or something. So, I mean, we've heard those rumors for years anyway. So, and like I said, if you're sure or you feel super confident this is the one missing piece, then maybe I can see it. But like I said, I was scared of the Seattle matchup this week when this trade was made. So I'm not sure I'd want to give up that first anyway. I turned out I was wrong, and he ended up scoring like 30 plus points. But I would have been nervous going into this week anyway with Stafford. So I definitely wouldn't want to give up the first. This is another one. Some playoff trades that were made before the matchups. TA3. Travis Hunter straight up for Saquon Barkley.
These get disrespectful. These Saquon trades are all disrespectful, by the way. this is Saquon. I the bounce back is coming. I keep in mind, as good as he was last year, first of all, that was with a healthy offensive line. Second, he had the longest season of anybody other than the Chiefs. Like, this is there are plenty of reasons for a down year for Saquon Barkley. We should have expected a down year from Saquon Barkley, but you're still getting one of the best running backs in the league with the bounce back coming. So in return, like, you're getting what, maybe the second-ish wide receiver for the Jacksonville Jaguars, who you're never going to know when to start. They just gave that massive contract to Jacoby Myers. Like, they don't do that if they feel good about Travis Hunter as their number one.
I'm with you, John. I've never been a big Travis Hunter guy, and he didn't do enough this year before he got hurt to prove otherwise to me. Plus, you know, the whole defense thing, how much defense is he playing? How much offense is he playing has always been a little bit of a concern to me. And I'm with you as someone who watches Saquon Barkley week after week. He's already starting to bounce back a little bit. Like, he's looked much better the last couple weeks than he has for a lot of the season. Whether that's the line, whether that's him, I don't know. But I agree with you. I think he's still – I've said this all year that I think he's the kind of guy who's going to play until he's like 30, and he's still got a couple good years left in him. You're never going to see last year again. He's not going to approach 2,000 yards. Right. But still, I can still see him having RB1 numbers. And I know a lot of us don't like to trade for older running backs, but to me, the price was good enough here for me. I'm not, like I said, not a big Travis Hunter guy. So I'm curious to hear Tommy's take.
I mean, it's a lifelong tradition of you and I never agreeing on trades. So let's carry it forward. You guys are both wrong. I'm sorry. you're thinking about this entirely wrong. I can figure out a spot starter in this league because I only need to start one running back, right? So I can recreate Saquon Barkley. I would do this if I was in the championship and the other person was giving me Travis Hunter, because we're at a point in the calendar where we're going to reach an inflection where these two ships are going to pass in the night, where Saquon Barkley is going to have a lower ADP in startups than Travis Hunter. And it's not that I want to carry Travis Hunter into August, September, October. It's that I can do a lot more with him. Rebuilders, middle tier teams, contenders, they like Travis Hunter, the idea of Travis Hunter. If all I have to do is get through a week or two, when there's this many flexes, I can put Michael Carter in and deal with the results of that and do a lot more with Travis Hunter. So I think at this point in the calendar, it's pretty easily the young unproven wide receiver / DB for me.
I had a feeling you were going to go that way.
Yeah, I know. I don't even like him.
Same. And I mean, and I don't hate the logic behind it at all. I mean, I just think that the most likely scenario is when it does come time to cash in Travis Hunter, you're probably trying to do it for someone in the Saquon Barkley range.
You're right. Yeah.
Like, you're hoping to just undo that trade. That's kind of best case scenario.
That's a good point.
So then the person who traded for Saquon lost this week and then traded him to someone in the title game. So Saquon Barkley for Bucky Irving, George Kittle, and the 309. I'll start with you this time, Tommy. What are your thoughts on this one?
Look at all you can get for Saquon Barkley. You used him for a week.
Which means you can get it for Travis Hunter.
Think about what you could get for Travis Hunter. That's a great point, John. No, this is the Kittle side for me pretty strongly. I think this was a great move and why trade deadlines should not exist for this exact situation. Yes. Let's just keep passing Saquon around, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And this trade probably isn't made if Kittle's perfectly healthy at coming out of that game, I'm guessing, too. This is trying to have a for sure starter that's been better than Bucky recently. And Kittle's not going to play for you, so you'll just throw him in there and get Saquon back. But I'm with you. Yeah. This is, and Frank has put some comments on some of the trades here. He also says Bucky's side easy. It is for me, too. I've always been a pro Bucky guy. He hasn't been great since coming back from the injury. But he looked very good before the injury at the beginning of the year. Still a young guy. Plus, you get, you know, Kittle thrown on top. I mean, that's pretty easy call for me, especially in the tight end premium. So what about you, Hoog?
I think it's close. I would still take the Bucky side, but I think it's closer than you guys think. Like,
oh, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a landslide trade or anything, yeah.
Like, I think you're taking on a lot of risk. Bucky has been stuck in a little bit of a committee. Man, it's so infuriating the way they go away from him just militantly once they get inside the 20 and it's all Sean Tucker.
There's almost
no touchdown upside with Bucky Irving. The receiving work typically goes to Rashad White. Like, it's a mess there where you get to consolidate all of that into Saquon Barkley. No, that's number one. Number two, after the season that George Kittle just had and the injuries, the constant injuries, like, I mean, what, 31, 32 years old, something like that. Like, I don't know for sure that you're getting him next year. So this is another one of those kind of 1 week propositions. Hopefully it gets you a championship. And then from there, it's all risk.
Yeah.
Carrying a workload is a skill, and Saquon has it. We're at a point as well where we all get to wish cast elite tight ends to Kansas City as Travis Kelce exits left. And so I think that's going to be a fun part of the non-point scoring season is literally every good tight end. Dave Njoku, you're Kansas City Chief. Kyle Pitts, Kansas Chief. <you know?
laughs> Yeah.
Why not Jordan
Goodwin? On the Chiefs. Oh, that'd be gross.
And then this one just happened today as well from the same guy who bought Saquon for his title game, which actually I believe, it was Russ. Russ bought Saquon, and I sent Russ Matthew Stafford for Baker Mayfield today. So
you got Baker?
Yes, I got Baker. So what do you think? I'm going to let you two talk since I made this trade.
I mean, man, like I'm trying to decide like what would the discrepancy have to be in week 17 for me to go from Stafford to Baker. Like Baker would have to be in the worst matchup possible, which he's not. And Stafford would have to be going up against Dallas, which he's not. So it's like, you've got to get like a 20-point swing for that to make sense. And I don't think you're getting that. I think you're probably getting single digits. So yeah, give me Baker in that dynasty league.
You agree, Tom?
I think you guys can both do better. I think there's a different trade out there. If I have Stafford, I'm not moving him for this. And if I have Baker, I'm not trading for that. I don't know what we're accomplishing here that I would do at least. But that's my QB bias, right? Like how we build teams is so fundamentally different. It's like, I'm not even considering this. I don't know what you're doing here. You got to tell me, Rocky.
For me, it was basically just, it was a cold offer from Russ. And he sent me Baker for Stafford. And I just figured I'm getting slightly younger. He's in his early 30s, I think, or around 30. I think he's certainly fine for what I like to get out of the quarterback position. He can be, his ceiling is that low end QB one in a good season. His floor is probably high QB two, which is what I'm basically looking for in quarterback production. And I have potentially like 5 to 6 more years of it where I may have 2 more games of it that I'm not even playing with Stafford. So, or 1 more game. And even if I'm wrong and he plays another year or two, I'm still getting a lot more out of Baker. And I don't think we can just assume also that next year Stafford is having this season again. So the two of them will probably be a lot closer next year anyway in terms of production. So that was basically my thinking.
I get where Tommy's thinking is. Like, I've just been working with him long enough to know that, like, he's saying if you can get Baker straight up for Stafford, like, add to Stafford, and how much further does that get you down the road? And which is true. But what I would say is, doesn't Mayfield get you incrementally closer to arms race more than Stafford does? So it's like, ideally, you take the entire leap from Stafford all the way up to, you know, Justin Herbert, Joe Burrow, Jaden Daniels, like, you know, ideally
I'm never doing that.
You wouldn't. We know that that's never something Rocky would do. But like, I mean, even for those of us who would, it's like, I feel like Baker gets me quite a bit closer to that move than Stafford does.
Yeah, you're right. That's why I think you can both do better. There's crazy point scoring potential with Stafford. Like you're recreating an arms race quarterback, but probably for a week. And with Baker, like you've kind of pushed yourself into potential purgatory. That's an aging team, right? That's not a team that I think is on the rise, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And so I just think like you're in for variance either way, right? So yeah, climb if you can, but if you don't want to, I would, you know. If I have to push a button, it's going to be on the Baker side.
Okay. There it is.
And we'll move on to TA4, where Frank called this a fascinating trade in his little comments, and I kind of agree. It's an interesting one. Daniel Jones, Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill for Lamar Jackson and Alvin Kamara. And I'm going to just read his comment. He said, "It'll be interesting to hear what you guys think of this, but he thinks Tyreek and Kamara essentially cancel out With a slight lean to Kamara for him. So he'll take the two QBs for the one QB. Curious your guys' thoughts.
Yeah, I agree on the Tyreek for Kamara. I would almost just leave that part out personally. Like, you're just kind of swapping, you know, placeholders, yeah, basically.
Old injured guys that we have no idea what we're getting out of next year.
Right. If they play.
If
right.
anything, yeah. Yeah,
exactly. So, yeah, I mean, he's right that it kind of comes down to Mahomes and Daniel Jones for Lamar Jackson. My thing is, and yes, there's a bias. Two of them, in fact. I think Lamar Jackson is incredibly annoying, and I think Patrick Mahomes is still the single best quarterback on the face of the earth. Apologies to Josh Allen, Mahomes is still just more talented. I would take Mahomes straight up. So if you're going to also give me Daniel Jones and the possibility of a second starter next year, like, slam dunk for me.
This is tough though, isn't it, John? Because you're having to carry dead weight for a while.
Mm-hmm.
With Tyreek Hill, you can't drop him, right? You have to carry him into the season. Unless yeah. he flat out retires. And even then, you might hold on to him in case he changes his mind. He's mercurial, right? Mm-hmm. Daniel Jones, kind of the same situation for different reasons. You have to carry him into the season not knowing if he's going to be healthy. So what do? Do you scaffold the position? Do you trade for somebody else? So what you're doing is you're saddling one team with a lot of dead weight, and you're giving them Patrick Mahomes for their troubles. And on the other side, mm-hmm. you've got Lamar Jackson, who... yes, is inconsistent. You've got a point there. And the back problems are concerning for me. I'm not saying that Lamar Jackson can't be an elite fantasy option for several more years down the road, but he's going to have to win more from the pocket, I think. He's going to have that elite speed probably for the rest of his career, but he's going to have to start winning even more from the pocket. And I really like the utility of Alvin Kamara. So I like the pieces on the Lamar side, but I will pay the burdened cost to get into Patrick Mahomes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's the one thing I will say is in Trade Addict 6, I have never struggled to find somebody to cut. Like, those are deep freaking rosters. So I don't mind taking on a little bit of dead weight in that league. But like, if it was a shallower league, this one gets really tough because the efficiency of Lamar Jackson, especially if you actually believe in Lamar Jackson, which I don't, like, that gets really, really tough. It gets really tempting to cut a little bit of roster space and bring in an equal quarterback.
It's not unfair, is it, Rocky? It's a pretty fair deal.
Yeah, I agree. And I basically agree with all your, including Frank's take, that I would take the Mahomes side. It's close between Mahomes and Lamar for me. I do think Daniel Jones, you know, assuming he recovers fine and everything, is going to be starting for a little while here. So getting an extra starting quarterback on top of Mahomes for Lamar Jackson is worth it to me, too.
Jones is a free agent, isn't he?
Yeah.
I
think they're expected to re-sign him given the injury and all that. I think. Yeah. I mean, I'm just from what I've heard.
Yeah.
I don't know how huge a market he's going to have.
Right.
But yeah. But even still, I think he'd be starting somewhere, even if it's not with Indy. But given the success he had this year, that would probably be preferred.
Yeah. Yeah. Just when he gets a contract, that value spike is going to be something, you know?
Yeah.
Like, kind of regardless of where it is. Like, everybody's going to say, you know, if it's back with Indy, everyone's going to say, well, I mean, that's where he resurrected his career. Mm-hmm. If it's somewhere else, it's, you know, it could be Pittsburgh, and they're like, oh man, like, he's going to be throwing to, you know, he's going to have an actual alpha with DK Metcalf, which he didn't have in Indy. Like, you know, there's they'll spin it somehow.
And our next one is a straight up player per pick trade. This was Frank and Russ, actually, in TA6. Travis Etienne for a late first. Well, it's Russ's first, so it's the 111 or 112 because Russ is in the TA6 title game. He said he got Etienne for peanuts last non-point scoring season, and this felt like the right return at the right time after he actually lost to Russ in TA6 this week. So is this, he said his initial thoughts are ETN will be tagged, but if he's anywhere else, his value probably declines. Do you agree with that?
I don't agree with the last part, but I think that this is a pretty, pretty fair deal, kind of regardless of where Etienne ends up. I think two firsts, even though they're late ones, you know, that's two more shots at.
Oh, no, this was just one late one. It was, I just put 111.
Ooh, 11 yeah. or 12.
Rust and his first.
Oof. Yeah, no. Like, because, I mean, you're hoping to just get a running back with the same type of opportunity that Etienne has with that pick. I would imagine, I can't imagine that there's going to be anything better for you. Like, it's not like you're getting a starting wide receiver in such a bad draft class that late in the first round. So like, yeah, I mean, you're just kind of re-rolling, trying to get a replica of Etienne basically. So, and it's a bird in the hand, you know?
Yeah, if you're playing just the odds, right? So first round running back with the amount of hits that ETN has versus a 111 or 112, the odds actually align with the veteran player wherever he goes. I don't think he's going to be a Jacksonville Jaguar. I think the Jacoby Myers deal precludes that. There's only so many dollars to go around. And the running backs are pretty good behind ETN. So probably a new home. You're going to have to embrace a little bit of uncertainty, but if you just want to numbers butt this thing, I go the ETN side.
That's funny because I actually lean the pick side here, which is the reverse of how me and Tommy usually talk about these pick for player trades. But part of it is too, like you said, he got ETN. He's making a profit here for one thing. I think he sent like a second plus in the non-point scoring season. And part of it, too, might be my own bias in that I was never a big ETN guy. And the uncertainty going forward of where he's going to be, what that's going to look like, I think I would be willing to just re-roll it with another pick. Or you could, and again, he doesn't have to make that pick. He can move that for something else that maybe he likes better than ETN. So,
see, like, I'm good with the Etienne take. The part that I don't love is I bought him cheap, therefore I can sell him cheap. You know, like at some point, let's actually defer to the market value and just say, because I mean, ideally, what you should be able to say is I bought him cheap, I sold him expensive, and I made a windfall off of it. Like that should be the goal, you know?
You know what's interesting? I'm looking at this deal. I made this deal. I sold Travis Etienne, right? For a 206 and a future second. And then I traded those picks and got Jackson Dart. So this was Travis Etienne for Jackson Dart.
I like that math better.
Isn't that interesting?
It is interesting, actually. That's around. I'm not paying more than that for Travis Etienne. Yeah. So maybe again, it's my bias. Then if you guys think his value is higher than a late first, and maybe it is. Maybe I haven't been looking at. I haven't seen a lot of ETN trades in general. So and I have no ETN whatsoever. So
and that might be market value. That might be if that's market value, I'm good with it. Yeah. I never like saying like, you know, I can afford to give up, like I can afford to lose blank, you know?
Yeah. And I don't think that's exactly what Frank was thinking when he did this or what he was saying. He just that I was just pointing out that it was a profit for him.
Yeah.
Okay. TA9, this is also me. So definitely going to let you guys talk first again. Jalen Waddle, Devin Neal, and what turned out to be the 210 because it is my second and I lost this week for Breece Hall.
Can I go first, John?
Yeah, totally.
You and I talked, gosh, in July maybe about Breece Hall and how down on him we were coming into this season. Mm-hmm. But we were both left with the conclusion, well, next year, 2026, that's going to be the year of Breece Hall, right?
Right.
Free agent. He's sick of the shit that the Jets are putting him through. Like, enough, you know? His enough moment is coming, and he's going to get a fat contract somewhere in a pretty cushy situation. I am really high on Breece Hall. I don't know if that's just like me wanting this to happen, but I think that the future is so bright there. And I'm a little bit concerned about Jaylen Waddle's situation. I think he's kind of a stuck asset right now with this mess that's going on with the Dolphins. I don't know, man. I kind of want the brighter pastures of Breece Hall in this deal. Do you agree, John?
I do. I'm nervous about it. Like, this is the type of thing that where, you know, going into non-point scoring season ahead of free agency, we're always like, oh my God, like he's going to land in the perfect situation. He's going to the Chiefs.
He's right? A Chief. Like,
yeah, that's good. He's going to New Orleans to replace Kamara. Yeah. Like, yeah, something like that. And then what actually ends up happening is he goes to the freaking Patriots or something like, and just kind of gets erased. So like, because ideally what we do here is take on Hall. He does go to that great situation and then we sell because it's never as good of a situation as we think. But like, there's also some risk there. So
bring him to the Panthers. Carolina Panthers would be perfect for him.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. 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 That would be a good one actually. Like, it's still a little messy there, but you would think he consolidates it. Yeah. At least that's the story that you tell when you sell him, right? Like right after he signs a contract.
He doesn't, Breece Hall does not need 75% of the touches though. If Hall is with a Chuba Hubbard type where he can share a backfield and take on a decent pass catching role and do the outside zone run thing, I think he would thrive, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Could be.
Yeah. So for me, this was kind of a little bit of a weird trade. And I did it for a lot of the reasons that Tommy was saying he would take Breece. I was playing last week in the semis and sent three guys. I didn't feel comfortable starting Waddle with Ewers. Obviously, I'm not starting Devin Neal on the injured reserve, and the pick aren't helping me. So I did start Breece Hall, not expecting a ton, but Moore made the deal because of what you said. I really like him going forward. And Waddle, I have a ton of Waddle. So for one thing, I didn't mind losing a share. But I also am concerned about Waddle going forward. I don't know what the quarterback situation is going to be there. Mm-hmm. And I'm honestly, I loved him coming out, but I'm not sure he's ever more than a wide receiver two. When he first came out, I had wide receiver one hopes. So I think that's like low-end wide receiver one is the ceiling of his outcomes at this point. So in terms of actual production, so... and his value is not that much to begin with right now. Anyway, nobody's really looking like to get Waddle except Russ, apparently. So
this is like when a lunar eclipse happens when Rocky and I agree on a trade.
But I'm with you too about the Breece in 2026. Yeah, like it's just I Hoog's right. It could go totally, you know, sideways and he ends up in some shitty spot none of us like. But yeah, I guess hope springs eternal, and I'm assuming he's going to end up somewhere where, even if it's not ideal, he takes over because I think he's that talented. And so, like you said, like Carolina, there's guys who performed there, but I still think Breece Hall would be the alpha there, be the A, the 1A to whoever's still the 1B or whatever. So, okay, so I'm going to go to the last one first because the TA-10 trade is interesting and probably our biggest trade.
It's
on
big.
TA-11 though, Derrick Henry and the 404 for the 204. Again, just wondering what you guys are valuing a guy like Henry in the playoffs. Is this too much, too little? I would imagine it's not too much. Is this, where do you think this falls?
It's probably pretty good, I think. So 204 ends up actually being basically 205.
In Trade Addicts leagues, yeah.
Yeah. 113 to the Toilet Bowl winner. So
I told Frank, I hate the 113 that Russ does that for that very reason, that whenever we say the 204, it's actually wrong.
And you know,
every trade we do in the non-point scoring season is – every second and third and fourth round pick is one pick lower. But anyway, continue.
Right. So I don't know. That's probably, that might even be a little strong for Henry at this point. Like you're getting one start. It's going to be a, like, it sounds like it very well could be either without Lamar or definitely with limited Lamar, kind of best case scenario, which puts the focus of the defense on Henry. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't think that you're getting what you think you're getting there. So yeah, I think I would just stick with the second rounder.
So real quick, this was made prior to this past weekend. And he did score 25. If you knew for a fact you were getting a 25-point game out of anyone in the semis, is that worth the 204?
Bye. Yes.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
So obviously they didn't know that when they made the trade, but that's what they got out of it. And I believe they did advance. So we'll see what he does next week.
Yeah. Here's the deal. Like, it works out. 3 weeks ago, this is a good deal. This week, can you trade 2/3 for Kenny Gainwell? I think you're probably able to find another Henry-like scoring potential for cheaper. That said, I don't mind it. You know, you got to make the deals that are available to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I basically agree with that. I think it's kind of right on the nose of what you should be paying. And like we said, it did work. It did work out this week. We'll see how it goes in his title game. But okay, now the big one of the week in TA10. Devon Achane, Jahmyr Gibbs, and a 27-3 for Justin Jefferson, Devonta Smith, and a 27-2. Who wants to go first?
I completely agree with Frank on this one. Don't totally even get the, like, this feels a little lopsided, to be honest. Like, my dirty math is Gibbs for Jefferson, which is probably a little bit of a stretch at the moment, but we'll give Jefferson the benefit of the doubt on name value. And then you're trying to get Devonta Smith in a second to get to Devon Achane. And I don't agree with that one. I think that's probably about a first round off.
Whoa.
Yeah.
What about you, Tommy?
Yeah, I'm on the other side.
What? Oh, you love Devonta Smith. That's
I do. So this is a case study in situations, right? Achane, is his situation likely to get better or worse coming into next year? I would argue it's likely to get worse. He was perfectly schemed up for the Dolphins. Yep.
It's hard to imagine. Like, what's the scenario where they downgrade from Tua?
It's not that, it's the head coach. I know they're saying he's probably going to be back, but we'll see. I don't think that's going to be the case. And if he is, I think he's going to be a lame duck. I don't foresee good things for the Dolphins, unfortunately. Sorry, Dolphins fans. What about Jahmyr Gibbs? Is his situation going to get better or worse? Their window seems to have closed, at least for this year. We have an assumption that, you know, teams stay great for these extended periods of time, but just like our dynasty teams, there's ebbs and flows. I could see this going sideways on them. And so I have concerns about Gibbs. What about the Vikings? They're in a pretty horrible situation right now. Like, it's terrible, right? But is Justin Jefferson good? Yeah, he's probably the best wide receiver in football. When you have a chance to get the best wide receiver in football, you should probably do it. And then you look at Devontae Smith, who is legitimately, I would say, a top 10 and probably not 10th best wide receiver in the NFL. He's just in a low volume offense. Those things can change. They often do. So I'm buying talent over situation, and I'm going to go get a free second rounder, and I'm going to take two excellent wide receivers, and I'm going to have the ugliest running back room that's going to eventually catch up and surpass these two running backs.
See, this one was super tough for me. Like, I think it's super close. So I definitely don't agree with Hogue that how much it might be off. And I might lean the receiver side too.
You're a receiver guy.
I'm not really a receiver guy though, but I can see, like, I think this is valuing Justin Jefferson at what he was before, like where he was before the year, where his value has probably declined a little because of the performance this year and because J.J. McCarthy looks like he may be there next year as well. But he is, like Tommy said, probably the most talented wide receiver in the league. Mm-hmm. And he's still got a lot of years left, and is going to have plenty of value. And maybe it's I tend to think I'm not a homer. Maybe it's hometown bias, but I'm with him on Devontae Smith too. I am a Devontae Smith guy, and there's definitely a world this non-point scoring season where AJ Brown is gone, which could help his production as well. It could also put more pressure on him, coverage, all that stuff. But I do think he could get more volume next year if that happens, because there's definitely been ups and downs this year with AJ Brown being someone who's been in Philly.
See, this is another one though that, like, I agree with you guys on the bounce back potential. There's not much nowhere to go but down for the running backs, and plenty of bounce back potential for the two wide receivers. I just come back to, you know, I think that we should still keep market values in mind. And the fact that, like, right now, you don't have to give up those two running backs for the two wide receivers. Like, you can get quite a bit more on top. And I think that we should still be trying our best to stick to that and to default to that.
And honestly, to your point there, if it's not clear, this was, you know, the person sending the running backs got booted out of the playoffs and sent them to somebody in the title game. This happened, I think, today or yesterday, one or the other.
So even more leverage. So
that's what I'm saying. More reason you could have tried to get more than Jefferson and Smith, like something else besides the upgrade to a second on top. So,
I mean, to zoom out further though, John, I don't remember if we talked about this on air or off. There was a tier cliff, not a tier drop, around wide receiver 17 compared to the previous 5 years of points per game and NB10 production in 2025. That signals to me, and I think to us, that we need to attack that tier when we see a player like Devontae Smith in that range where he has really, really strong underlying metrics. He's playing, I think, it just like snap percentage, not total snaps. I think he's like the second or third highest snap percentage wide receiver participator in the NFL. So he's on the field as much as he can be, and he's doing really good things with the opportunities that he has. It suggests that in the tier that he sits in, which is going to have, like you said, a market depressed price, there's a lot of upside with that specific player. And so I think just like on a meta level, we should be attacking that this non-point scoring season, finding those really strong potential producers in the wide receiver 17 to 24 range.
Yeah. I and Jefferson is the same thing, but just kind of on a higher level, right? Yeah. So like, yeah, these are absolutely targets. I just think that, you know, again, I think that you've got all the leverage on the running back side to squeeze out some more.
Great point.
Okay, so that was our last trade. So that brings us to the listener questions. And some guy named Frank in the chat starts us off here. After Tommy's Hall of Fame Thanksgiving episode last month, what foods do Tommy and Hogue make for Christmas and or Hanukkah? I'm just going to let you two go. I'm out of food discussions, as we all know.
Oh, thank God. I love you, Rocky, but I did not want to hear what you're going to cook.
Bacon cheeseburger, I'm sure.
John, I made Thanksgiving yesterday. I made a turkey. I made the stuffing. I baked my potatoes and then I mashed them. I really like doing that, where it's like almost like a twice baked situation. And then I took the carcass and I made stock and I made soup the next day. So Thanksgiving foods are still alive and well in the Blair house. What are you making, man?
So I don't make anything. My family is Swedish. And so we've got a tradition of making this Swedish sausage called korv, which is it's grayish pink. It's just as bland as it looks. It's absolutely disgusting. My uncle went to Sweden several years ago and was asking, like, where can I get some korv? Like, most of my family loves this stuff. It's disgusting. but he was asking, where do I get some korv? And everyone's looking at him like, wait, why do you want korv? Turns out korv is basically the Swedish version of Spam. It's like, they're like, that's like poor people food. And here we are, our freaking, you know, upper middle class family, just noshing on this stuff. Just like, this is the best thing. It's not good. It's disgusting. And it's like what you eat when you can't afford anything else in Sweden. Like you always have some korv just hanging out in the back of the freezer. So when I married into a Jewish family, I was like, this is awesome. Finally, I get some like reasonable food around the holidays, right? And they made my wife made latkes the first time she cooked. They actually are pretty good. I'll admit
that. Yeah, they're good.
She cut her finger chopping up the onions, put a Band-Aid on it, goes back to work, you know, shredding all the potatoes, shredding all the onions, putting everything together. And then, you know, after kneading all of this stuff together and putting them into pancake shapes, she pulls her hand out and the Band-Aid is gone.
No.
So this is just, you guys are just cool with this, right? Like, just how many Band-Aids have you eaten in your lifetime? Like, probably one a year at minimum.
No.
So yeah, like holiday foods are a hellscape for me.
That's why you have to wear a finger condom. You can't just go Band-Aid. You have to roll that thing up. John, I've talked to you for I don't know how many hours. My stepmom is Swedish, and we ate korv growing up. It is
no way.
You're right. It's gross. It's
disgusting. Like, it doesn't look any good. And then we also had to help make it.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, you're just shooting it out into the pig intestine or whatever to make it into sausage shape. And it's just, which is gross. Like, you have to keep the intestines in water at all times. And it's just, like, it's gross to make it. It's gross to look at it. And then you taste it and you're like, I mean, what else was I expecting? Honestly, that tastes exactly like I expected when I saw it shoot out into the intestines.
Rocky, you know this. I mean, you make korv like every weekend, don't you?
This is the first time I've ever heard of korv, let alone eaten it. So I have a feeling I would hate it as well. So
you would hate it.
Okay, but now we have some football questions from our good friend Dynastud. As always, he gave us a bunch. His first question is, who's the best player you're considering benching in a championship matchup? Who's the worst player you may have to start? This must be really hard for Tommy with all his teams he has to think about now.
Oh, come on. Don't worry, I have great quarterbacks, too. This is going to go off really well.
I was gonna say I don't know, maybe we should keep quarterbacks out of this just because there's only like a lot of people are gonna have a third quarterback who's good that they might be sitting or something like that. Not me necessarily, but a lot of people. So
my two answers are not quarterbacks.
And I don't have one off the bat, so why don't you start?
So I've got best player that I'm considering benching, Justin Jefferson. Yep. Excellent matchup. Horrible quarterback situation with Brosmer coming in. And it's, I mean, we've had such a tough season with Jefferson anyways. And now what should be a league winning type of matchup, we get just the worst possible quarterback situation for him. Like it's going to be dicey. It's going to be really dicey to start him. Worst player that I'm considering starting, Elijah Higgins, who gets the tight end cheat code, the Cincinnati Bengals. Trey McBride is already going to get what he gets. But I mean, we've seen this several weeks in a row where multiple tight ends can feast on that defense. They're that bad at stopping tight end. They have no plan for stopping tight ends, and they haven't all season long. So Elijah Higgins is almost guaranteed a touchdown.
Love it, man. Best player I'm willing to bench right now. I love the Jefferson call out, by the way. Kyle Pitts, I think, needs to be in the conversation with Drake London coming back. Mm-hmm. He was playing the Drake London role and admirably. Like, this is the Kyle Pitts we all waited for. Doesn't the script seem to end with us being just brutally disappointed championship week now that we're finally getting paid off by Kyle Pitts? Drake London eased back in last week and then he goes back to 12 targets and Kyle Pitts gets two.
Yeah. Yep.
So considering benching him, the lowest ranked player that I will consider starting, gosh, I'm struggling even to remember his name. The fourth string running back for the Cleveland Browns. The rookie, Raheem not Sanders? Dylan Sampson.
Raheem Sanders.
Raheem Rocket Sanders. I may be starting him in a couple of leagues because I had Quinshon Judkins.
I like it.
Woody Marks. I don't know if he's going to come back. And so it's really going to be a consideration between him and Michael Carter, I think, unless, I mean, that's really where we're at with some of these running back decisions. I had a lot of eggs in the Quinshon Judkins basket, and it really hurts because I have a lot of trade deadline leagues and there's no solution around the corner. So maybe Rocket Sanders is going to do the Amir Abdullah thing and put up 25 points and carry me to a few championships, hopefully. Rocky, do you have any ideas there on best and worst players?
I just took this literally and just looked at my teams. I didn't like try and find somebody like that I would start or anything like that. But because of that, I don't have a good answer because the two title teams I do have are pretty streamlined and I don't have some great guy I can afford to bench, even if he's underperforming. And I don't really have anybody that I think is super bad. I guess, I mean, looking at my two rosters, the best I'm probably benching is Stephon Diggs, who's not even been that great recently. So he did have a good game last week. And the worst is only because of the settings of the league, because he's not really the worst, but his name is the worst. So I don't know how helpful this is to anyone besides me. But it's Kevontae Turpin, because this is a heavy kick return league.
It's a good one.
And he's startable. But that's, I guess that's a good reminder, though, just to always make sure you're checking the settings of your league. I have two leagues like this where I start Kevontae Turpin on a regular basis because we do heavy. I forget what exactly it is, but it's significantly more than what Trade Addicts does, to the point where he's a viable flex starter every week for me. So, and I made it to the title game with him in there. So, so it worked out. But I mean, those are the only two guys that really stuck out to me as Nate. Like, I basically have about 12 possible starting guys in a 10 roster lineup. So everybody else is kind of semi-filler or young guys or whatever. But let's get to the next question, though. How do you deal with anxiety during the fantasy playoffs? Because I get too anxious when my season is on the line to the point that I literally avoid football in weeks 15 to 17, excited to go back to it for week 18 in the playoffs. Do you get anxious?
Like, I mean, I'm over here playing Latka's Band-Aid roulette. Like, my anxiety is elsewhere. My anxiety is nowhere near. But no, I get it. But I mean, I don't know about you guys. I've been playing this long enough and suffered enough losses and bad losses, taking some really bad beats. It just doesn't really affect me anymore, you know. But again, you know, part of it is I kind of found some leagues that induced some anxiety in some very, very different ways. Rocky knows all about that. Like, it was pretty easy for me to ignore fantasy matchups knowing what was coming for me in the Survivor Order.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't get super anxious. Like, the one I do get anxious is my home league because, A, it's 20 years long. A bunch of the same guys have been in there. So I kind of, like, that's the one I care the most about. It's also the one that I can either, I either spent the most money on and lose or make the most money on because of the payout. But I never get so anxious, like, that I can't watch. I actually find it exciting. Like when, yesterday, I was up like 18 with Kittle and a kicker because it was a redraft league, home redraft league, versus McCaffrey. And it was fun. It became even more fun when it was clear that I was going to win, but it was fun going in, just having that, you know, anticipation, you know, McCaffrey could score 35 and Kittle and the kicker could underperform, but I could also win easily. And I enjoy that.
The first week of the playoffs to me feels like Christmas Eve almost, or like when you first get to a party or something like that. All of this work has been done to get you to that moment. And these aren't even your best teams. You know, these are the teams that just kind of snuck in. This is the fifth seed. That's not your bye team, right? And so I'm excited. The first round of the playoffs is excellent because I know that I have some teams that are moving on because they're not playing, and the rest of them, I'm hoping to go 500. You know, I just want half of them to get through to the next round. And so it's like a joyous celebration capping off the end of the regular season. The next round effing sucks. I hate it so much because you're close to real money. You're close to a championship, but you don't know if you're going to make it, right? Nobody wants to play for third place. That almost doesn't even like matter, right? And so it's really, really high stress for me. I don't like it. It's my least favorite week of the fantasy calendar. And so I avoid football for the most part that week.
You guys are the same.
Yeah. And then championship week, you know, you're making money, you know?
I kind of figured like, this is kind of where I stand on it. And I was kind of thinking you might be the same, but I get it. Like, what I love about the fantasy playoffs is that's where you get to really test your processes. You really get to test, you know, what you think and what you pretend to know about roster construction. Yeah. You know, player takes, like the Infinity Stones that I identified, you know, all those months ago. Like, I'm there with Amon-Ra St. Brown and Puka Nacua. And now I'm like, I get to find out, was I right or wrong? This isn't just about, you know, taking down a league. This isn't about the money. This isn't about whatever trophy. None of that matters to me. What matters to me is I get to find out, did I just do this right or not?
Yeah.
You know,
not against a jabroni, against a good team, you know,
these are
the good teams that are left, and I'm going to take you down because I picked the right process. I picked the right players. I went through this. If you're stressed out this week, chop the pot. Full blessing. Chop the pot.
Play all that glory. Said about testing your process, and then you go out and start Lamar and Love, and they
that's
and you, nothing you can do.
Sometimes we don't. Sometimes it's inconclusive,
which I won despite that. But I bet a lot of people did not because of starting those guys.
Yeah, it's an unfair game.
Okay. Next question: what is your lineup decision process like? I've heard start rate is a good one to use the crowd to make sure you don't galaxy brain yourself, but who's start rate? I've gotten opposite conclusions from different sites. Do you use Fantasy Pros ECR at all? I'm going to answer real quick first, because I do not use Fantasy Pros ECR. I don't use anything. I just go with my gut. I look at it. I look at the matchups. I do have a general sense either from the site or some, often the app or site that I'm on. But somewhere of who's good against the pass, who's good against the run. Like I said, I made a bad call on not starting Stafford last week because of that. But that's generally what I do. I don't use anyone else. I just, and maybe, I don't know if this is helpful to him or not, but that's what I do. I would rather it be what I think and how I feel and lose that way than, oh, Fantasy Pros had, you know, this guy higher and then I lean the other way, but I'm going to go with what Fantasy Pros said, and then that guy goes off on my bench or something like that.
I could not agree more. I freaking love that. Like, and that's kind of what I do too. I mean, you know, I always say, like, you know, start rates, that's great at the beginning of the season before we've really kind of collected information on matchups. By this point in the season, we know what defenses do and can't do. Like I said, Cincinnati cannot stop a tight end. They can't stop any tight end. So it's like anyone on that depth chart can get in the end zone against Cincinnati. And at this point, you know, like I know that to a point where I will, you know, like start rates don't mean nearly as much to me as the absolute fact that a tight end is going to shred the Cincinnati Bengals. You know, so like I'll take a lower start rate over and pick on that matchup. So I do a lot of that. I do look at my projections versus my opponents and say, all right, they're projected to beat me by 20 points. I need some upside here. I can't play it safe. I can't go with the guys who just kind of, you know, grind out 10, 15 points. Like, I need Kevonta Turpin. I need that upside. I need, you know, someone who, like, if he does break off a kick return touchdown, Like, that's how I make up the difference between these two lineups. So, like, I'll do that. And then the one other thing that I do, this is not something I advise. This is superstition, and it absolutely sucks to be shackled to something like something this stupid. But I insist on having a player in the latest game possible between the two teams that are playing. So if my opponent has somebody in the Sunday night game, I insist on having somebody in the Monday night game, or at least the Sunday night game. I want to fire the last bullet, and I hate sitting there watching. My fantasy team is done. I've got a lead, and now I've got to just watch them pile up points until they pass me. It is the single worst feeling on earth, and I refuse to do it. I put in Josh Downs over Josh Jacobs this past weekend, just because
it worked out.
it worked out. It ended up working out, actually. I still lost, but like it went better. But the big thing was he had he had Eddie Pinheiro, the 49ers kicker, and I was like, I'm not just sitting there watching him kick field goal after field goal without a rebuttal from me. So I insisted on having, and Josh Downs was the only guy available. I'm like, great. The 44-year-old quarterback's deep threat. Let's do that. That sounds fun.
But I just got to say, that sounds crazy to me, but I kind of love it. I would never do it. I just put my best guys in, but
like I love that. It's horrible. And like I said, it's horrible to be like stuck with that, but it's the only way that I ever win.
I have an answer, but first I need to tell you, John, I don't think you've noticed this yet. You and I we're playing for the 113 in TA6, right?
Yeah.
I am purposefully starting. I've overridden the optimizer to start two players on Monday Night Football just because I'm playing you.
You son of, that's crazy.
You
that's
told me crazy. This last
that's,
week.
That's superstition. That is horrible process, and you know it.
I'm not saying I'm not going to change it, but I just because I'm playing you. Because we talked about this last week, how you do that. Like, I can't get on board with that. So just to mess with you, I did put in Tyler Algier and Blake Corum into my starting lineup.
So Tommy's answer on his lineup setting process is psychologically just beat their ass all week and then Sunday change it.
I'm hoping you'll trade for Tyler Algier and Blake Corum. That's my ultimate plan, is for you to trade for all of my Monday night players.
Send me the offer, man. Just do it. You know I'm going to take it.
Here's the deal. I'm not good at setting lineups. I haven't actually set a lineup in 3 years because I'm bad at it. And expert consensus rankings are just better, quantitatively better. I have a better start sit rate than almost anybody in any of my leagues. Why would I try to beat something that is already good? I can spend my intention elsewhere. Where I'm willing to override that is in a championship or playoff game situation where we've got early reveals, right? So Christmas games are happening, and quite a few of them. So if my team does really well, that can change my decision-making process. If it does really poorly, or vice versa with my opponent, I think that not using that information as it becomes available in critical weeks is doing yourself a disservice. And so the only time I will override what is a traditional best practice is if the situation is dynamic and I have information that a lineup optimizer isn't accounting for.
Okay, got a couple more here from Dynastud. Brissett gets the coveted Bengals matchup in championship week. He says best. I think he might mean worst, because I think that makes the question make more sense. Who's the, I think, worst QB option you'd start him over? Okay. I thought he said start over him. Who's the best QB option you would start him over? Are we just going back to trusting him again after he burned us last week?
Ooh, yeah, I think so. I mean,
too, because he was doing this in good matchups prior to last right. week.
Yeah.
I mean, totally. Not good. Good defenses in bad matchups for him.
Yeah. Cincinnati is a little tricky just because they've got DJ Turner. Like, it's like just like randomly one shut down corner and nobody else can do anything. So like it is a little tricky. The wide receivers could have a little bit of a tough time, but again, the tight ends will feast, so it won't matter. So, like, man, I think I would trust him, especially if I'm chasing upside. I would start him over, man, just about anyone. I'd probably start Burrow over him. I'd probably start Josh Allen over him. Trevor Lawrence is pretty hot, has a nice matchup. Tommy says that he's hurt, though, so it'd be a decision. He's got to be top five.
I agree, John. I think we can narrow the list of QBs that are no-brainer starts over Brissett to Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, Drake May. Everything else is a decision.
Yeah. Yep.
Matthew Stafford?
No, thank you.
So floor, I would take Stafford. Upside, I think I would go Brissett.
Yep.
Yeah, I think I agree. I'm just trying to find an interesting name, but I'm not really seeing anything that sticks out.
How about Jalen
with Hurts, a Rocky? Great matchup? Huh?
Ooh. How about Jalen Hurts?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to still – they've been playing much better offensively the last few weeks. Even that Chargers game where they lost, they were moving the ball. They just kept throwing interceptions. So,
two and one play. Well, one was a fumble.
Two turnovers.
I'm never going to forget
that. That was insane. I don't know. I think Brissett is safer. Buffalo is pretty good against quarterbacks, at least according to MFL. Hurts is a little scary given the way the offense has gone up and down this year. So, yeah, I would definitely, I think, start Brissett over Hurts.
Hurts is playing for something, and that's worth something, too. Like, Brissett's kind of not. He's just, well, a contract.
But I definitely think it could be a high-scoring game, but I could also see the Eagles, offense struggling again, too. I don't think it'll be, like, as bad as it was, like, in the some of those primetime games we subjected the nation to against the Packers and the Lions earlier this year that we actually won. But, I actually think it could be in the high 20s, low 30s, but I don't feel confident in that. So,
yeah.
And especially, I guess, Allen's banged up, right? So, I saw a note today that he's looks like he's going to play, but he's banged up. So, maybe they don't score as much either, especially against the Eagles defense. So maybe he doesn't need to do as much.
Yeah.
And then this last one, again, these last two couple questions are both a little redrafty, but this Gainwell run is ridiculous. Now DK is likely suspended and Warren apparently picked up a new injury last week. How high can Gainwell go in the ranks? Who are you legit starting him over? I know he's been good, but it still scares me every week that, like, I don't have any game up, but it would scare me starting. And I'm sure people are putting him in with confidence that are not me, but
he's high enough that if you're in anything more than like a start eight, he should probably hit a flex spot, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he's been doing it like quite a few weeks in a row now. So
yeah.
Like, Aaron Plus Jones.
That catch he made last week. Did you see that?
Yeah.
How could you not start him?
Man, Aaron Jones, Derrick Henry, like they have pretty tough matchups. I think you got to at least consider it. Man, like I don't know if this is a move that I could make, but like benching Jonathan Taylor for Kenny Gainwell might be a league winning move.
That's the thing, John. Like, you could start Kenny Gainwell and Ramondre Stevenson going back to that running back trade and keep relative pace. That's the problem with trading for elite running backs is Kenny Gainwell is relevant. Like, Ramondre Stevenson could be an RB1 this week.
Yeah. It's so funny.
I haven't looked at this. He is RB4 total points, RB14 on the season. That's insane. Yeah.
He's been great.
He's been keeping it up even when Warren's healthy. It's been insane.
I wish he played on Monday night, John.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be pretty awful. I would have to trade for him. Like, there's just no way around it. But
I mean, Javonte Williams, would you play Javonte over Gainwell?
By the way, since I'm just still looking again, since week 11, he's RB5.
Yeah. And that's mostly Warren healthy, right?
Yes. Like, yeah.
That's crazy. Like, he's better with Warren. That's pretty nuts. Oh, man. Yeah, I think I would play him over Javonte. I would have a really hard time with the decision to keep him on the bench to throw out Jonathan Taylor, who's going against a very good run defense and who's going to likely get game scripted because unless Tommy's right that the ankle is that bad on Trevor Lawrence, like they're going to put up points and they're going to take away the run.
The only downside I see is what if Gainwell is chipping against that crazy pass rush of the Cleveland Browns? Do they keep him in, you know?
Yeah, to block, yeah. By the way, Jalen Warren RB10 since week 11. That's kind of crazy.
They've both been
on. Yeah, they've both been doing well.
It's so weird to be able to start both running backs from the same backfield.
I am against you, John.
Stop that.
On TA6?
Say more.
This is terrible.
Okay.
And but I'm totally going to find the Band-Aid in the locker this year, too. So it's going to go perfectly with this game.
But that is the end of the show, our show sheet. So that is the end of our show. I want to thank these two guys for coming on with No Frank here. Always great to talk with you two. Since we didn't do it at the beginning of the show, I do want to ask our question we ask every week. Why don't you tell everybody who you are, what you do, and where they can find what you do. Tommy, I'll start with you.
Yeah, love you, buddy. Thanks for having us on. Like, anytime I get a chance to talk to you, it's like the highlight of my week. It's been a blast. Yeah, FF Tommy B on Blue Sky. I get to talk with John almost every single week on the Superflex Super Show. And that's about it these days. No more Dynasty Junkies. Not doing a lot of podcast appearances or anything like that. But just a plug for our Discord. We've got a few hundred people in there that are just like killing it on the strategy talk. And they're always in there putting out really good stuff. So if you like what John and I talk about, there's hundreds more people doing the same thing on a daily basis.
And John?
Yep. All of that, at Superflex Dude on Twitter and Blue Sky, Superflex Super Show with Tommy. Some writing and a little bit of ranking and a few other things for DynastyLeagueFootball.com. And yeah, that's kind of it. But yeah, join that Discord and get at us there. And Rock, thanks for having us. Love you, buddy, and can't wait to get you on Super Show. That's happening several times this NPSS, by the way. So get ready.
smart to abbreviate that. We'll always say non-point scoring season.
we got lazy about it. We're so committed to it that we're just like, yeah, we're just abbreviating this thing.
Yeah. But I'll finish up with our stuff. Again. Just if you can, if you like what you heard here, sign up for the Patreon. You can see our beautiful faces when we're recording here. As the link goes out to our patrons, you get access to our Discord, the Cool Kids Club. Lots of great trade talk going on there all the time. And a lot of smart people in there. As always, support Fantasy Cares. Frank has a lot of stuff right now on the show sheet that I'm not going to get into because he can talk about it a lot better than I can in detail. But just always be supporting Fantasy Cares. They're always doing great work out there. But that pretty much finishes us up. So good night, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Great Addict Podcast, a member of the DLF family of podcasts and a proud member Dynasty Addict Podcast Network. Please follow your hosts at Dynasty Haha and at Dynasty FS Addict. Please subscribe, rate, and review. We will catch you next time on the Trade Addict Podcast. Poopy Pants. Daddy's the best. See ya.